We're up to Pasuk Vav in Perek Beis, Pasuk Vav. We're going to do the five psukim to finish Perek Beis this evening. Can we have a volunteer to read Perek Pasuk Vav? That's verse 6 to the end of the Perek and then the chapter. What's that? Oh, okay, so you're volunteering. Go ahead.
The Atal Ben from Alaf Yilam, Zaytan, from Mitri Abraham, Alaf Yilasi, Sarabim, Sarabim, Osbach, Sarabas, Hasabim, Atal Yashay, Mitri Abraham, Alaf Yilam, Sarabim, Sarabim, Alaf Yashay, Ki, Beit, Mary, Zanah, the Dibarta S. Sabarai, Alayhan, Im, Mashmadu, Im, Yaskalu, Ki, Mari, Himas. Yatal, Ben, Adam, Shema, S. Asherani, Nadaber, Im, Elepa, Al, Sehim, Mari, Tevei, Mari, Tevei, Im, Tipa, the Apo, S. Asherani, Yosei, Himas. The Ere, Begine Yad, Shaluka, Ulai, Begine Bel, Megina, Seher. The Rev, Ozal, Lepanai, Behir, Kutuba, Panim, Teapur, the Pasur, Elepo, Panim, the Heged.
Excellent. Would you like to translate? We've got the English. 6-10. Chapter 2, 6-10.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And ye son of man, fear them not, and fear not their words, for they are obstinate and soaring with you, and you sit on Eglatim. Fear not their words, neither be dismayed by them, for they are a rebellious house. And you shall speak my words to them, whether they listen or they forbear, for they are rebellious. But you son of man, hearken to what I speak to you. Do not be rebellious like the rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I give you. And I saw, behold, a hand stretched out to me, and behold, it was a scroll of a book, and it spread it out before me, and it was inscribed before and behind, and there was written upon it lamentation and murmuring and woe.
Excellent. Let's go back to Vav. That's verse 6. Read one more time. The Atav and Adam Atira Mehem Umidirahem Atira. Don't be afraid, says Ben Adam. Don't be afraid of them, meaning don't be afraid of the Jews. I'm telling you to go and give admonishment to the Jews. Don't be afraid of them. And don't be afraid of their words. Because Kisaravim Salonim Osach, because they are obstinate and thorns to you. Bel Akrabim Atayoshev, and they are making you sit on Akrabim. Akrabim is an interesting word. It could mean scorpions, it could also mean thorns. Midivahem al tirof, and their words do not be afraid. Umitnehem al techas, and from their faces do not tremble. Kiveis merihema, for they are a house of rebellion or refusal. Now I'm going to read two more. I'm going to read Zayin and Ches. Tell me which word seems to recur in these three psukim. Vidibarta es devarai alayhem, you shall speak my words to them. Im yishmu vimechdalu, if they will listen, if they will stop. Ki merihema, for they are rebellious or refusing. The Atav and Adam, you son of man, Shema es Hashani medavrei lecha, listen to that which I say to you. Al tihi meri kiveis hameri, do not be a refuser or a rebellious person like the house of refusing or rebellion. Say, if yicha, open your mouth, ve'echol es Hashani nosein elecha, and eat that which I am giving to you. Which word do you find four times in these three psukim? Rebellious. Meri. They are rebellious, they are refusing. Do not yourself be rebellious, nor should you be refusing. Then, in Pasuk Tes, I saw a hand sent to me. So apparently he saw a vision, he saw a hand being sent out to him. And in it was a scroll. He spread it out before me. It was written both on the front side and on the other side. And it was written in it, Kinim Vahege Vahi. Lamentations, how do they have their lamentations, murmurings, and woe. Okay. Let's first discuss this word Meri. rebelliousness, or refusing. That's the word that you find in these three psukim four times. If you find it so many times, obviously we're supposed to take notice. Now the general message is that the Jews are refusing, the Jews aren't listening, and you, Yechezkel, don't be afraid of them. Stand up to them, speak my words, and you yourself don't be a refuser as they are refusing. Don't be a refuser like they are refusing. So, what is the point in telling him, don't be a refuser? In what way would Yechezkel have been a refuser? What is Hashem telling him? Don't you yourself refuse the way they are refusing. What is he saying not to do?
What he's supposed to do.
Okay, which is? Okay, to say the prophecy, right?
After he just fell down, I don't remember that connected.
Oh, well, that was in awe of Hashem.
Yeah, but
okay, but well, we'll get to the reason in a moment. So he says, don't refuse to say over the prophecy the way that they are refusing, the Jewish people are refusing. Now, what are the Jewish people refusing to do? Behave, listen, right? That's what they're refusing to do. So you, Yechezkel, don't refuse as they are refusing. Now, he would potentially refuse to say over the Nevuah. That would be the potential refusal. Why would he not say over the Nevuah? Okay, that's you're both saying the same thing. The same you were saying before, falling down, correct? Right. So perhaps because he, in his humility, he doesn't want to do that which he's supposed to do. Okay, that's one good answer. Is there another reason why he would refuse to do it? Okay, they're not going to listen to him. Or what was that?
They'll kill him.
Okay, he's afraid of them. Like he says, don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid of the words. Don't be afraid to stand up to them. So there are many reasons why he might not want to say the prophecy, either because of his own vision of himself, his own picture of himself, is one that isn't worthy of doing what Hashem is telling him to do, or because he's afraid of the people to whom he's supposed to say the Nevuah.
Well, we get it when he says Son of Man.
Oh, this is over and over. That's what he is called. That is the title of Yechezkel throughout the entire book.
What's the reason?
I think that as we said regarding Son of Man, it's to bring out the point of the two sides of the coin. That he on one hand is on the one hand being the only man to be amongst the angels, but at the same time he is only a man. And so it's bringing out the humility and bringing out the fact that he should not let it get to his head. That's the constant. No. He's called Ben Adam throughout the whole book.
Let's say he was speaking to him by his name. Let's say he was.
Would he have said Yechezkel?
So many times.
I don't know. I don't have a good question.
I don't understand why he's saying over and over and over and over. By his name. I don't think in any other part. I mean, do we see that anywhere else where it's constantly spoken to that way?
Well, Ben Adam is reserved for him. You mean that he says
every sentence.
I mean, address me first. I don't know. Don't know the answer. But I think it is to hammer home the point. This is what he's all about. As we've mentioned many times, this is the essence of Yechezkel. This is why he was what he was, and this is why Hashem communicates with him. He never wavers in this midah, in this characteristic.
So God's helping him to say with that
music. I suppose so. I don't know if he needs to hear it or we need to hear it. I'm not sure which one it is. Yeah.
I feel like in Israel, to say Son of Man, almost sounds like, are they preventing the Son of God instead of Jesus? But it's Son of Man. Why not Son of Man? It could have been Son of God.
Well, we mentioned Son of Man is because man has that dual essence. He can be why, so just call him man. I think that that's a little too strong. You call him man, it sounds like you are the man, like Adam Harishon. Adam is man.
Okay, so that's what I was
yeah. Now that's why Yechezkel would have refused to speak to the Jews, and the Jews were refusing to follow the word of Hashem. I want to present to you a study in this word, meri, which means to refuse or to rebel. There are other words that you could have. You could have merida, which means to rebel. There are other words that can be used. I want to take you through a little bit of the history of this word meri or meri. And from there, I want us to understand the particular form of refusal that is being mentioned over here. The word meri or meri is found in Chumash, I believe only in one place. You know? Okay, good. That's a good guess. I mean, it doesn't say over, it says meriva, that they were fighting. Shimunah ha-morim, it says. Okay, good. That is the same root. Okay, excellent. There are other places, but I meant is the exact phrase meri or meri, just the three letters, mem, resh, yud. Korach, good. Now that was a guess because of Korach being a rebellion, right? Okay, but the truth is it wasn't said about Korach.
Okay.
Good, excellent. But it wasn't said about Korach. After the story of Korach, after Korach is after he meets his demise and the people who are with him are killed, so then the Jews still retain a certain degree of rebelliousness. There is that, you know, once the floodgates have been opened and Korach has shown the way to rebellion, the Jews, the whole notion of Moshe being in charge, Aaron being the Kohen, and the Levim particularly being chosen as the one of the 12 Shevatim, of the 12 tribes who are going to be the ones who serve Hashem, it doesn't sit well with the Jewish people. So they complain. Now, when they complain, Hashem tells Moshe, we're going to settle this once and for all. What I want you to do is take from each of the princes of the Shvatim, each of the princes, the Nesiim of the tribes, take from them their staff. Each one had a staff. Take each of their staff. And take Aaron's staff. Aaron being the head of the Levim, take his staff as well. Take all 13 staffs and put them in the Mishkan. Put them in the Mishkan. Then, I believe it was overnight, then you'll come back in the morning, and the one that the staff has blossomed, that it has blossomed, Matehu Yifrach, the one who I choose, his staff shall blossom. It'll be like a tree. And it was made out of wood. It'll be like a tree. It'll actually blossom into some sort of a growth. So leave them there, and you'll see what happens. The one that blossoms is the one that I chose. And of course, he comes back in the morning, and Aaron's staff has blossomed. Vayotei sarach, vayotei tzitz. It blossoms. Vayigmol, and it produces what type of fruit? Anybody know?
Almonds.
Good. Shkedim, almonds. Why almonds? Has to do with this coming Shabbos song. Why? Why almonds? Okay, they blossom. They blossom quickly. They're very quick to blossom. And the remez is, the hint over there is, that those who start up with Aaron and those who start up with the Levim, their retribution will come quickly, very quickly. Anybody who questions the fact that the Kohanim and the Levim have been chosen, the punishment will come very quickly, just as almonds blossom quickly. That was the that's why the song about Tu B'Shvat is about almonds, because it's one of the first trees to blossom. Now, we had to get into Tu B'Shvat somehow, right? So that's what happened. Then Hashem says, Moshe takes out the staff and he shows everybody, look what happened. Aaron's blossomed once and for all, settles it. Hashem has chosen Aaron. Fine. Then Hashem says, Hashavet matei Aharon, take the staff of Aaron and return it back to the Mishkan. Put it back in the Mishkan. Lemishmeres laos, as a protection, as a sign, livnei meri, to the children of the rebellious ones, the refusing ones, those who refuse. Place it over there. It should be to keep them from, it should be a reminder that this should never happen again. That nobody should ever rebel. You see the staff of Aaron, you see the almonds that have blossomed from it. This will remind everybody that you got to be careful. Don't question what I've chosen. Korach and the people who were with him, what was the reason? I don't want to know what the reason is why they refused, why they didn't like it. They were rebelling. They didn't want Aaron to be chosen. But what negative characteristic is being brought out over here with Korach? Okay, it's jealousy. Ultimately, it's jealousy. He was jealous that Aaron was chosen over him. The truth is, he was jealous that Eliezer on Ben Uziel was chosen to be the leader of his particular family over himself. Rashi explains it. But there was a jealousy over here. Now, jealousy comes from a certain... It also grows out of something else. Where does jealousy come from? A person is jealous. So I'm jealous because I want what the other person has. What's that? Okay, kavod, honor, and... Okay. Insecurity, lack of self-esteem, lack of emunah. If you don't trust in Hashem enough, that leads to jealousy. Now, if a person is fully convinced that Hashem gives everybody what they need and everybody has what they're supposed to have, then jealousy has no place. Anytime a person is jealous, and we're all jealous, everybody is jealous. Jealousy is a natural human yetzer hara. We all have it, and it's a very, very difficult one to completely eradicate from one's system. And we all have it. We all struggle with it. But jealousy comes from a lack of true belief in Hashem that whatever He gives out is the way it's supposed to be. And nobody can take away from me what Hashem has destined for me to have. Whether it's materialistic or whether it is spiritual or whether it is whatever it is, whatever position it's supposed to be, nothing can be retaken from me that is supposed to go to me, and I can't take from you what's supposed to go to you. That jealousy lacks that perception, that understanding. Now, you find that the Pasuk says regarding Karban Pesach, we had it in this past week's Parsha, regarding the sacrifice of the Pesach, it says Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. Any foreign person shall not eat from the Karban Pesach, which the simple meaning is a non-Jew is not allowed to eat from the Karban Pesach. Only a Jew can eat from the Karban Pesach. But Chazal say, our sages say, and Rashi cites this in Parshas Bo, that there's a second meaning to it, which means a Jew who is a mumar. Same word, Mary. A mumar. A mumar is someone who has rebelled or refused. He is someone also who cannot eat from the Karban Pesach. What does it mean, a mumar? It means someone who decides that certain parts of the Torah aren't for them. Someone says, let me contrast it. A person can say that I'd like to keep the whole Torah, but I'm having trouble in this area or that area. So that person hasn't rejected the Torah. The person is saying, I'm having trouble. But then a person can say, I accept the Torah except for this. This I don't believe in. This isn't true. This was never given. This is not acceptable. That is a mumar. That's someone who refuses, who throws off a certain part of what Hashem has commanded. A person like that cannot eat from the Karban Pesach. That pasuk is a very important pasuk because it is from that pasuk that the breaking of the luchos took place. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain with the luchos and he saw the Jews worshipping the golden calf, the Egel Hazav, he wasn't sure, should I break it or not? Should I throw them down or not? And Moshe said as follows. He says, look, one of the mitzvot, only one of the mitzvot of the Torah, is Karban Pesach. And it says, Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo, that if a Jew throws off a certain part of the Torah, he cannot eat from the Karban Pesach. So here the Jews are throwing off everything. They're worshipping the golden calf. And it's all of the Jewish people. And I have the entire Torah here. All the more so that they can't possibly accept this Torah. And he smashed the luchos. It was from the fact that this pasuk of Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo that Moshe makes the jump that the luchos should not be given to the Jewish people because they're worshipping the golden calf. When a person says that I accept most of what Hashem is telling me, but not this, what a person is in effect saying is that I'm willing to serve Hashem on my terms. Person isn't saying, I don't want to serve Hashem at all. But a person is saying, I'm going to pick and choose what is acceptable and what isn't. You hear the difference between that and saying, I accept everything. But unfortunately, I have a lot of trouble in this or this area, and I'm not there yet. I'm still growing. That's one position to take. But to take the position that this part of the Torah is wrong or not true or not given or not for me or not accepted, that is saying that I'm willing to serve Hashem, but only on my terms, not on His terms. And of course, ultimately, if you think about that more deeply, that's not really serving. That's doing what I want to do. When I decide what I want to do and what I don't want to do, then I'm picking and choosing. I'm not only serving Hashem, I'm serving myself. But when I say I accept everything, I just have trouble in certain areas because I'm a human being and I need to grow, that's accepting everything. That's saying I'm serving Hashem on His terms, I have to get there. There's a big difference. It's a world of difference between those two attitudes. A person who doesn't accept the lot that Hashem has given them, like Korach, who said, I don't want to serve Hashem in this way, I want what Aaron has. I want what the Levium have. He was a Levi. I want whatever else the other parts are. That's also a form of not serving Hashem on Hashem's terms, but on my terms. I have to have this, that, or the other thing is saying that whatever Hashem has given me in life is not acceptable. I'm not ready to live this way. I'm not ready to serve this way. I'm only ready to serve or live my way. That is the essence of the word Mary or Marie. One can rebel in many ways, but the word Mary or Marie, and what's being brought out over here, is we don't choose how to serve Hashem. Hashem tells us how to serve Him. Now that's true on a broader level, on a national level, and that's true on an individual level. On a national level, we all have the same Torah. And since we all have the same Torah, we're all told to keep the entire Torah, which means we're being told to serve Hashem with this Torah. Not with a different Torah, which means not with a Torah that has this or that altered, or this or that changed, or this or that differently than what the Torah is, but the entirety of this Torah, that's the way we are told to serve Hashem. Every single one of us is expected to serve Hashem in the way that the Torah says. And that, in that way, it's the same. It's a national responsibility. Then there's an individual responsibility, and that is that we serve Hashem in the place and with the strengths and weaknesses and whatever advantages or disadvantages that we were given by Hashem. And that's individual. Each one of us has our own strengths, weaknesses, advantages, disadvantages. Each one of us has our own place. Each one of us has our own whatever different measures that we have of things in life. Each one of us has a different measure of everything. And in that, it's an individual basis. We're expected to serve Hashem with our lot, with what we have, with what we are given. One who refuses to accept what Hashem has given them, has told them to do, that is a Mary, that is a Marie. That is that form of rebelliousness. That's what Hashem is telling Yechezkel the Jews are guilty of. They don't want to serve me on my terms. They want to serve me on their terms, which really is not serving me. And that's why he says to him, you don't be a Mary Kaveh Tameri. Don't you refuse as they're refusing. I'm telling you, this is your job. Your job is to go and say the prophecy to them. That's what I'm telling you to do. You could have a million reasons why you don't believe it's your job. You don't feel you're worthy, you're afraid of them, whatever the reasons are. That's your reason. That's not my reason. You are expected to serve on my terms, not on your terms. And therefore, don't be, if you refuse, you will be a Mary like they are a Mary. So don't be a Mary, don't be a Marie like they are. Now you understand though, that although this is being said in a pretty strong way, in a pretty heavy-handed way, the way I'm saying it over, but you understand that ultimately, why is it that we serve Hashem on His terms, not on our terms? Because ultimately, why would Yechezkel refuse? Let's go back to Yechezkel. He thinks he's not worthy. He's afraid of them. But if Hashem is telling him to do it, who knows better whether he's worthy or not? Him or Hashem? Who knows better whether the fear is a founded fear or an unfounded fear? Him or Hashem? Hashem has the bigger picture. Hashem knows us better than we know ourselves. And therefore, if Hashem has told me that He wants me to do such and such, how do I know He wants me to do such and such? Because that's where He's placed me in life, and those are the strengths and weaknesses He's given me, etc. Then He's telling me I can do it. And He's telling me I have the wherewithal to do it. And He's telling me it is for me. And that's what my purpose in life is. And so to refuse is to lose sight of what Hashem is saying. It's to lose sight of the fact that Hashem really knows what is the best and knows what things are we can really do and can't do. So if we measure our abilities and our inabilities with our own yardstick, we're very likely to sell ourselves short. If we use Hashem's yardstick, then we're very likely able to rise to the occasion and we're able to do that which Hashem wants us to do. And so that's what he's saying. Don't be a Mary, give a Samari. You don't refuse the way they have refused. Any questions on this? I want to move on to the next point. Okay. Let's go on to Pasuk Tes. So then he says, I saw, and behold, a hand was sent out to me, and in it was a scroll. Now, excuse me, I want to go back to Pasuk Ches just for one moment. At the end of Ches, it says, Pitzei bicha, open your mouth, ve'achol es asher ani noten elecha, and eat that which I'm going to give you. Now, this is a metaphor, according to Rashi. It means, open your mouth and take in that which I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you words to say. Well, if I'm going to give you words, I'm going to put them in your mouth, and then you're going to give them back out of your mouth to the Jewish people. That's the metaphor. Open your mouth and eat the words. Eat your words. Eat the words, and that way you will then say them back out to the Jewish people. Hold that thought, though, because that'll be in Parag Gimel, which will likely be next week. We'll discuss this eating that he's talking about. But then he says, I see a hand sent out, and in it was written a Megillah Sefer, in it was written this scroll. It was this scroll in the hand. So he brought the Salafanak, he spread it out before me, Chasuva, and it was written Panim V'achar, front and back, V'chasuv Eileha, and it was written in it, Kinim V'hege V'hi, lamentations, murmurings, and woe. I got it? Okay. Now, this phrase, Kinim Vahege Vahi, is both poetic and essential. These three words mean a great deal. There's a major amount embedded in these three words. And this will likely take us the rest of tonight's class, is to understand what was this sefer, what was this scroll, what was it front and back, and written in it, Kinim Vahege Vahi. Written in it these lamentations, murmurings, and woe.
So it's not common, it's the English word.
For which word?
For the middle word.
The word hege can mean murmuring, and it can mean what's moaning. Yes, it can mean moaning as well. Yeah, it has a double meaning. We'll address that. The Luchos read the same on the front and on the back. There was an ace. The truth is an all four sides. No, this is going to be a little bit different. I have a piece of paper. I meant to bring a piece of paper. I just need any blank piece of paper. It makes no difference. Thank you.
Okay?
Okay. Now, there is a Gemara in Erevin. And the Gemara says as follows. It's on Daf Chaf Aleph, which is 21a. The Gemara says that it's describing the Torah, the entirety of the Torah. And the Gemara is trying to understand how large is the Torah, the body of the Torah. Now, we know how large the Torah is. Open up the Torah, the ark, and take out a scroll. You see how big the Torah is. It's the size of a scroll. But the Gemara doesn't mean that. The Gemara means the entirety of Torah, not just the written Torah, but including the oral Torah, everything there is about Torah. Now, everybody knows that Torah is huge, vast. The depth that the Torah has is almost beyond comprehension. Certain parts of it may actually be beyond comprehension. It's huge. The Gemara wants to know, relative to the physical universe, how big is the Torah? That's what the Gemara wants to know. Now, we have a pasuk that tells us, the pasuk is in Yeshaya. I'll tell you what parak is. It's in parak Mem. It's in chapter 40. That says that the universe was is a zeres by a zeres. How much is a zeres? A zeres is half an amma, half a cubit. Now, you're going to want to know how big that is. We don't really need to know how big that is, because all we want is a ratio. We want to know how big is the Torah relative to the universe. The universe is a zeres by a zeres. As I said, half an amma, half a cubit by half an amma. So half an amma by half an amma, for all of you mathematicians, is one quarter squared amma. Half times a half, it's a one quarter squared amma. That's how large the physical universe is. We're measuring, of course, in a very, very large amma. And the physical universe is a quarter, a square quarter of the an amma. Now, how big is the Torah? So the Gemara says a fascinating thing. It says that David HaMelech gave us a little bit of a hint, but didn't tell us much. Iyov told us a little bit more. Yechezkel revealed even more in this pasuk right here. And finally, Zechariah gave it away to tell us how big is the Torah. The Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says that David HaMelech told us the width of the Torah. He tells us, how big is the width of the Torah? It is, in Tehillim, in Kuf Yotes, it is Rechava Mitzvotzecha Me'od. Your mitzvot are very wide. They're very wide. Didn't tell us much. That very is difficult to explain. I mean, that's pretty ambiguous. Very wide. But he only talks about the width of Torah. You move on to Iyov, and in Perek Yud Aleph, he writes, Arucha me'eretz mida. The measurement of the Torah is longer than the land. Urechava mineyam. And it's wider than the ocean. Okay, so we know it's bigger than the world, but how much bigger? He doesn't say. But he does talk about two dimensions, length and width. Width and length, both. Yechezkel over here tells us a little more. He says, and we'll read it in our pasuk again, V'hichesuva panim ve'achar, that this scroll, which is the Torah, was written front and back. That means it's no longer just length and width, but it's length and width on both sides. So there's length and there's width, and then there is length and width. It's two sides, not just one side. So once we can get the measurement, we have to understand that it's really on two sides. Then, finally, Zechariah fills in the information. Zechariah tells us in Perek Hey, Vayomer Eli, Hashem said to me, or the Malach said to me, Ma'at ro'eh, what do you see? Va'omar, and I said, Ani ro'eh Megillah Afa, I see this Megillah, this scroll. Afa means that it's been processed, a processed scroll. Aruch Arka Esrim Ba'ama, its length was 20 amos. Urechava Eser Ba'ama, and its width was 20 amos. Its width was 10 amos. It was 20 by 10 amos. 20 amos by 10 amos. But the Gemara understands that since Yechezkel says it was panim ba'achar, that it was front and back, that means not simply that it was written on the back, which is true, but more than that, that the scroll was was actually doubled over. Which means, let me just see if the Gemara grounds it or anything else. Yeah. Because, yeah, that it was doubled over like this. This is the way it was. The scroll was doubled over. So it was 20 by 10 on one side, and it was 20 by 10 on the other side. Which means, if you have 20 by 10 and 20 by 10 and you open it up, and you get 20 by 20. 20 by 10 and 20 by 10, you add the two together, you get 20 by 20. Either that makes sense, or you'll just have to accept that. But that's the way it works geometrically. So then it's 20 by 20. And if you turn it over, you have another 20 by 20. So, the Gemara says, the Torah, therefore, is 20 by 20 and another 20 by 20. If you put them both together, you get a 20 by 40 scroll. 20 amos by 40 amos, which, if you multiply that out, comes out to 800 square amos. That's how large the Torah is, 800 square amos. The entire physical universe is only ezeres by ezeres, a half an amma by half an amma, which means it's a quarter if you square it. It's a quarter squared amos, which means that if the entire Torah is 800 square amos, so a quarter is 800 is 3,200 times a quarter. Right? So the Torah, the Gemara comes up, the Torah is 3,200 times the size of the universe, of the physical universe. The Torah is 3,200 times that. Now that, go ahead. Yes. The entirety of the Torah. But he doesn't describe the whole thing. He only describes that he saw it was written front and back, which, Chazal's understanding, he didn't see the inside, only the front and back. Well, he doesn't describe how it's the inside. He saw the front and back.
But when it has something to do with that, like the actual physical world is in time and space, whatever, and the Torah is outside.
Okay, okay. Clearly, there's more in the Torah than just the physical universe. We know that Chazal say, Yistakel Baraiso Bara Alma. Hashem looked in the Torah and created the world. The world was a result of the Torah rather than the other way around. The world, I mean the universe, came after the Torah. The Torah was created first and then came the universe. And the universe was made, as we have described, specifically for the purpose of being able to keep the Torah. That is, the universe was made in that fashion. And the Torah precedes it all, and it is larger than it all, and it is more, it is much more than it all. Which means, if we look at it in today's terms, because today, several hundred years ago, you wouldn't think in these terms, but today's terms, we measure our knowledge of the physical universe by the knowledge of science. That is our measure of the knowledge of the physical universe. The knowledge of the physical universe, whatever that is, and however much you'll ever discover, is going to be only 1/3,200th of the knowledge of the Torah. There's 3,200 times more information, more knowledge, more depth in the Torah than there is in the physical universe. How much of that is accessible to man? I don't know. But there is that much. Now, what is that to mean? How are we supposed to understand that? What is the point? I mean, is this to make us feel dwarfs? To make us feel like, well, whenever we learn, we're not doing anything? What is the point of telling us this talk? We're never finished. That's the main thing. Right? Okay, so what's the main point of this? So, the Marsha, who's one of the primary commentaries to the Gemara, explains that we have here four different dimensions that are being discussed. If you open it up, you have the length and width of the front, and you have the length and width of the back. Which means that you have four different aspects of Torah. One is the width of the front, and you have the length of the front, and you have the width of the back, and the length of the back. David HaMelech only describes the width of half the front. He doesn't say it's doubled over, just the width of half the front. That's all he says. Eov says the length and width of half the front. Yechezkel discusses that it's doubled over. So opening it up, you get the length and width of the entire front, but nothing in the back. And then you just put it all coming before you unfold it in Yechezkel. And then finally Zechariah tells us that the length and width of the front and the length and width of the back. The Torah has many levels of understanding to it. There are many, many different levels of understanding in the Torah. There is what we call pshat. Pshat means the simple meaning. You read the Torah, you read the prophets, the pasha pshat, the simple meaning, that's one level. There's a deeper level called drash, or drasha, which means a deeper level, a deeper understanding, a more in-depth understanding. Those two are the front. Those two, the Marsha explains, are the most basic understandings of the Torah, and those are the understandings from where we operate. When we study, we're going back and forth between those two basic understandings, Pshat and Drash. But then, if you open it up and look on the back, there's something deeper, something much beyond most people, and that is Remez and Sod. These two different words for secrets or hints, a deeper level. And those are not generally understood. Now, one can discuss this on a level of, from a perspective of study of Torah, but the Marsha takes it a little bit differently and explains it regarding what is the perception of people. Which means that, you see, the mitzvot of the Torah, just the mitzvot, is, Rosh, let me explain how he says it. He explains that the front that you see is the length and width of the front is just the simple meaning. The width is the mitzvot, the width and length is the whole Torah, but just the simple meaning. When you're able to open it up and see the entire front, now you also get the drash. Now you also get the in-depth understanding. And that's what he's describing. David HaMelech only is describing the mitzvot. That's it. Eov is describing the entire Torah, but all on the simple level. Yechezkel is adding the drash. And then Zechariah is explaining there's much more there that doesn't meet the eye, and that's on the other side. What does it mean, and the same Gemara says it, what does it mean, kinim vahege vahi? Those of you who have Rashi, who looked at Rashi, Rashi says this over here, he brings the Gemara. What does it mean, kinim vahege vahi, lamentations, murmurings, and woe? Kinim, Rashi says over here, is puranusam shel tzadikim ba'olam hazeh, it's the calamities that righteous people go through in this world. What we otherwise call tzadik v'ralo, which means the suffering of the righteous. That is kinim. Kinim is the suffering of the righteous. What is hege, the murmurings, Rashi says? That is matan scharon, she'erananu alav, la'asid lavo. That's the reward of the tzadikim that they will sing and praise Hashem about in the future. That's hege. And he, woe, is Nehi shall rishayim olam haba. It is the woe, it is the pain of the evil ones in the future, in the world to come. What we would otherwise call the prospering of the wicked in this world, but their retribution in the next. Yechezkel is about to embark on a nevuah. And this prophecy, as we've described many times, is going to be a negative prophecy. It's going to be about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be about many terrible things that will befall the Jewish people. Before he does that, Hashem is giving him an insight into kinim vahege vahi. He is showing him the entirety of the Torah, but on the front side. The entirety of the pshat and the drash. The simple meaning and also the deeper meaning. The front side of the Torah has that which corresponds to it in the physical world. You see, the physical world has a length and a width, but only on one side, not on the other side. There's no other side. It's just one side in the physical world. The physical world does have a length and a width. It's much, much smaller than the Torah itself. It's even much smaller than just the length and width of one side of the Torah. Even half of one side of the Torah is much larger than the physical universe. But the physical universe does have that which corresponds to the one side of the Torah, the length and the width. If you only focus on what meets the eye, then that is like pasha pshat. That is the simple meaning. And that the physical universe has. There is a simple meaning, there is understanding, there's wisdom, there's a lot to learn. Just like in the Torah. It pales in comparison in terms of the amount of knowledge, but there is what there to learn. But when you start getting into the more the depths of Torah, into the other side, or the other side and then the inside. When you start getting into those areas, you don't have anything corresponding to that in the physical universe. Which means that if you try to interpret certain things simply using what you see, simply using evidence that you can touch and test and verify, that you can use a scientific method on, you're going to fall short about the things that are on the other side or that are on the inside. Those things you will not be able to understand based solely on what we can physically experience. You can understand the simple meaning of things, of the Torah, based solely on what we physically experience. But you cannot understand the depths of Torah, even just the other side, let alone the inside, if you're just going to approach it using our physical senses, the physical universe. When it comes to destruction, righteous people suffering, wicked people prospering, etc., you can't operate only with the physical universe. If you do that, there is no understanding. It is impossible to approach the Holocaust if you're going to look at it only from a physical understanding, only from this world's understanding. If that's the approach you're going to use, you're going to end it with only dismay. And you can't approach it. There's no explanation. It can't be explained. It can't be understood. You need to examine it with a depth that is beyond the physical universe. And that's what Hashem is showing you kind of over here. When we're about to get to the first major destruction of the Jewish people, the first major destruction that affects the entirety of the Jewish people, which is the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people have never been decimated in the way they're about to be as an entire nation. The 10 tribes were taken into exile. That was pretty bad. But now that the rest of the nation is going to go into exile, this is the first major destruction that we as a people are going to endure. And of course, we know now that that's the first, unfortunately, of many. Hashem tells Yechezkel, Kinim vahege vahi. You can't understand this if you're not going to take into account the next world. The suffering of the righteous in this world is inexplicable if you will not add to the equation what's going to happen in the next world. The prospering of the wicked in this world is inexplicable if you will not factor into the equation the suffering of the wicked in the next world. These things will baffle human beings without taking the other dimensions into account. But, and this is extremely important, Yechezkel does not need to be shown the inside. That's not necessary. Which means, you see, the inside is much more in-depth. That's a level of understanding, Remez and Sod, which most of us will never reach. That's Moshe Rabbeinu was there, and the great sages throughout history were there. But most of us will never get to that level, not in this world. One may think that that which is inexplicable is just that. We really can never get to the understanding of these things, of the prospering of the wicked and the suffering of the righteous. We'll never understand it. We can't understand it on any level, because to understand it, you really have to get to the inside of the scroll, and we're not there. Hashem is showing Yechezkel, you have to work a little bit. You can't just look at the front. You're going to have to turn it over and look at the back, which takes work. It takes work to delve deeper and to think beyond the physical universe. That does take work, but it's attainable, and it's attainable to everybody. The first two sides are attainable by everyone. No one is beyond that understanding. We can all understand that on one level or another. But it takes a little bit of work, and it takes a willingness to look beyond this world. And the basic answer, and I say only basic because there are books written on this. There are books written by great sages on this. But the basic answer to the suffering of the righteous and the prospering of the wicked is the next world. At the next world, everything will be the way it's meant to be. The righteous will prosper and the wicked will suffer. And without that, the understanding is lost.
Right. That's right.
Excellent.
And not an
inside. I was going to go to that next, but we're out of time. But you are correct. There is a level of suffering of the righteous and the prospering of the wicked that even Moshe Rabbeinu did not understand, which means that it is beyond us to a certain extent. There are certain parts of it that we'll never get to. We will never fully understand something like the Holocaust. But it's not that it's a closed book. It's not that you can't get anywhere. You have to be honest, and you have to be willing to work, and you have to be willing to accept things that are beyond the physical universe. But even so, as you're saying, we will never fully understand it. It's going to be, in some ways, beyond us, because even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't get to the very bottom of it. That's what that Gemara is saying in Maseches Brachos. We didn't have time to go into that. But that is true. But there is a level that we can understand. And that's what's being brought out over here. For next week, I'd like to do Perek Gimel. For those of you who would like to prepare ahead, I suppose do the entire... We won't finish the Perek next week, but you can start Perek Gimel to do that. And we'll see. Maybe we'll get into this thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not sure if we'll do that or not for next week. I do want to make one announcement as soon as I shut off the tape.